Good evening, everyone. Thanks, everyone, for joining us for this Kingborough Council meeting on the 25th of May 2020. My name's Dean Winter, I'm the Mayor of Kingborough, and you are watching a live stream of the Kingborough Council meeting via Facebook. We thank you very much for joining us and taking interest in what we do. We've been really pleased with the number of people that have been watching, and fair to say it's been a lot higher than what we normally would through just having a gallery open at 5:30 on a Monday night and a cold autumn night. So it's great to have you all with us, and we're going to kick off this evening with just to let everyone know that not only is this meeting live streamed, it's also recorded and kept as a permanent record on our council website. So that's for everybody that's going to participate this evening in the meeting. The next item on tonight's agenda, in fact, just before I do that, also for those who are watching at home, you are able to follow along with the agenda, which is available on Council's website, and also I think it will be available as a comment if you want to go straight to the link. But to commence the formal proceedings, so I'd like to acknowledge our traditional custodians of the land, which we're not meeting tonight, but all of us are joining in from the traditional land of the Muwinina people. I acknowledge their contemporary Tasmanian Aboriginal community who have survived invasion and dispossession and continue to maintain and fight for their identity, their culture and Indigenous rights. Attendees this evening, I am a little slightly unsure if a couple of people are here, but we'll do our best. This evening, myself, Councillor Winter, Councillor Westwood I know is here, Councillor Bastone is logged on, Councillor Cordova I know is here, Councillor Fox is here, Councillor Midgley is here, Councillor Watts is here, and Councillor Reet. I'm just not sure whether Councillor Street and Councillor Grace have joined us yet. Are you with us?
Councillor Street is here.
Excellent. Great. Councillor Grace, are you with us? So we haven't got Councillor Grace, and I haven't heard from him. So we will move on. Hopefully he can join us. If not, we'll mark him as an apology. From our staff this evening, we have our General Manager is Gary Arnold, our Deputy General Manager is Tony Ferrier, our Chief Financial Officer is John Breen, Executive Manager of Engineering Services is David Reeve, our Executive Manager of Governance and Community Services is Daniel Smee, our Manager of Environmental Services is John Dorr, Manager of Development Services is Tasha Tyler Moore, our Stormwater Engineer is Alex Aronson, our Communications and Engagement Advisor is Sarah Wilcox, and our Executive Assistant is Amanda Morton. Apologies, as I said, unless Councillor Grace joins us, he'll be marked as an apology for the minutes of this meeting. Confirmation of minutes is on page one, and there's a motion there that says that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 8, held on 11 May 2020, be confirmed as a true record. Does any Councillor wish to move and second that?
I'll move it, thank you. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. And a seconder?
Councillor Westwood to second.
Thank you, Councillor Westwood. So the motion is as I just read. All those in favour, if you can please, we're just going to do this by acclamation rather than going through the list. So if you can unmute yourself and please say aye if you agree with the motion.
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion is carried unanimously. The next item is the workshops held since the last meeting. Since the last meeting on the 18th of May, we held a workshop on planning, which is just a general meeting about planning matters and how we're tracking in that area. Next item is on page two, and it's declarations of interest. Does any councillor have a declaration of interest to make tonight? Okay, there are no declarations of interest. Also on page two is the transfer of agenda items. Does any councillor wish to transfer an agenda item this evening? If there being none, I'll move on to questions without notice from the public. because of the way these meetings are operating at the moment, it's very difficult for us to have questions without notice. But for anyone who's been listening to the meetings and would like to put a question to council, the best thing to do is to email kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au and address the and make it clear that it's a question on notice for a council agenda, and the general manager will provide a response in our next agenda item. Okay, the next item is questions on notice from the public, and at the time the agenda was compiled, there were no questions on notice from the public either. So we moved to questions without notice from councillors, and Councillor Bastone is early out of the blocks and would like to ask a question. Councillor Bastone.
Thank you, Mayor. I just have two short questions. One is, when will the 40 kilometre an hour signs be put on the road leading from Bly's Bridge to East Cove on Bruny Island? I have had this question on notice before, and I was assured it would be done, but it hasn't been done. That's my first question.
Mr. Reeve.
Through Mayor, is that a replacement of some existing signs? If that's the case, I'll chase it up with our depot to see where that sits and provide some information direct back to you.
Thank you. The signs actually went missing about 3 years ago. So. The second one is, do we as yet have a date for the tip shop reopening? I'm getting many questions about it.
Mr. Reeve or Mr. Ferrier?
Through you, Mayor. Yes, so we are looking at a possible opening in June. So we're going to consider that at the KWS board meeting, which is this week, just to confirm that. And at that stage, then we can inform both councillors and the community.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Councillor Bastone. The next one I have is Councillor Westwood with a question without notice.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question about some of the reports that are now appearing as appendices to the council agenda papers. I can understand why this has been done for most of them, but I noticed for this meeting that the summarised financial report, which normally comes to council every 2 months, has been included as an appendix. And I'm wondering why this has been done, and potentially whether next time we could receive it as a report to council so that we can ask questions in a public forum about council's financial position.
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Westwood, thanks for that question. We will have that rectified for the next meeting.
Thank you, General Manager. One more question in regards to Blackmans Bay Beach. Is there an update that we can have on the water quality and infrastructure works in Blackmans Bay?
Look, let's take it on notice, because I know this goes across Mr. Reeve and Mr. Dools with us as well, but it's probably best we take it on notice and then we can provide the public with a full full response, because I know there's been a lot happened since our last report. So we'll take it on notice, Councillor West.
Thank you.
The next, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you very much, Mayor. My first question, I've got two questions, and the first one is that the coronavirus pandemic has exposed some awful instances of racism across the nation, with hundreds of reports of racist abuse being hurled at people of Asian appearance and frontline workers, including nurses and paramedics, some reports of physical violence and assault. My question is, what is the council doing to record instances of vilification in the municipality? What's council doing to protect people from it and to raise awareness of our zero tolerance approach to it? And what can we do to help law enforcement bring people to accountability, those who are responsible for it?
Thanks, Councillor Cordova. You're right, there has been some reports of some instances, particularly in Greater Hobart. I'm not aware of any in Kimberley itself, but certainly in Greater Hobart. As a response to that, led by Lord Mayor Anna Reynolds, four Greater Hobart mayors recorded a short video last week, and with a message that was around being tolerant, anti-racism, and tried our best to spread a message about, particularly about tolerance during a very difficult time. That's certainly, I think, a good thing. In terms of the rest of your question, in terms of identifying instances, I'm not aware of any. I'm not sure whether General Manager have anything to add or any of the officers are aware of any instances or any other actions that Council is taking. General Manager, and feel free to subcontract that to someone else.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I have not been advised personally, but from memory, I think that we may have received an email along those lines. So I'd have to take that question on notice, Mr. Mayor.
Great. So we'll add any. We'll also take that on notice so that we can add any additional information for you, Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. That would be fantastic. And indeed, any information about what the future planning is for reporting mechanisms, because obviously, if we're not reporting and recording it, then it'll be difficult to keep track and do anything about it. My second question, Mayor, is about a street tree strategy. Kingborough is developing fast with many new subdivisions, and I have long advocated for regreening and beautifying our streets and neighbourhoods. In July 2017, the City of Hobart released its street tree strategy, which opens with the line, quote, "Someone is sitting in the shade today because someone planted a tree a long time ago." So my question, Mayor, is what is Kingborough Council's street tree strategy? Do we have a long-term vision for tree-lined streets in Kingborough? And how can community members meaningfully engage with Kingborough's long-term street tree planning?
Thanks. I'm not sure who to pass. This could be anyone here, any number of staff, Ms. Tyler Moore or Mr. Dool. Maybe General Manager, I'll throw to you and you can send it along to the most appropriate person. General Manager.
Through you, Mayor. I suspect that my colleague, Mr. Reeve, would probably like to commence.
Mr. Reeve.
Thank you, General Manager and Mayor. So a street tree strategy there is a fairly common thing for councils to actually have. We don't have one that covers all of our areas at council at the moment there, but it is a project in the making, if you like, in terms of actually getting a comprehensive strategy there that covers off on all our street trees throughout the municipality there. In terms of the ownership of that, whether that fits within engineering or fits in other areas there, I guess that's still yet to be determined, if you like. So there has been some preliminary discussions as regards that, but there's a little bit more work to do before we actually get to a finished strategy.
Thanks, Mayor. What kind of time frame are we looking at for a street tree strategy for Kingborough?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. As I said, it's very much in the embryonic stage. So to deliver a proper street tree strategy there, apart from involving various different parts of council there, typically these ones also go out for community consultation as well at the same time. So there's some time associated with that aspect. So I would say the best guess there, it's somewhere between 6 to 12 months.
Thanks very much, Mayor. And just for the clarity of the minutes, it might be good to add the term street trees in terms of this strategy that I'm talking about. It's distinct from other trees throughout the municipality. We're just talking about urban built environment. Thanks very much, Mayor. That's all from me.
Thanks, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a couple of questions from me. The first one's in regards to the email we received today from Honourable Mark Shelton, re the Boost for Road and Community Projects. I'm wondering, did Kingborough Council receive any funds? And if so, what are the plans for these funds?
Yes, thanks, Councillor Midgley. We did receive just a touch under $600,000 through that pool of money. The original intent, as we understood it from the government, from the Australian government, was to distribute those funds based on applications that came from councils. We put a lot of time and effort into our application. The government, though, I think probably wisely decided to to distribute the money based on methodology through the State Grants Commission. And because of that, there's a spread across all 29 councils in Tasmania. It's not even though it's based on the Roads to Recovery program, and council, for example, Northern Midlands Council, which has less than a third of our population, received almost $1 million, and we received $600,000. Hobart City Council and Glenorchy, which are larger than us, received even less. So there's a methodology there that creates a situation that I think it's fair to say we would prefer a per capita approach. But we are very, very grateful that the Australian government has supported local government with this, because it will be important. Mr. Reeve, I know you're very enthusiastic about this. Do you have any information for Councillor Midgley on exactly what sort of projects might be considered for funding under this program?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, so there is some eligibility criteria associated with this particular fund. So they are generally tied up with road-related projects or community infrastructure projects there, and there's a whole raft of them that are listed as examples down there. It's fairly wide and fairly general in its criteria, allowing to, I guess, the spend within those areas there to go on a number of different things. So I guess in terms of that, that's, I suppose, a good thing for council. I guess the thing that's uppermost in my mind there is that while we're going through this particular crisis there's a fairly large effect on staff. We've got staff in lots of different locations there. It's going to be difficult to deliver everything we want to deliver, and this is extra funding on top of that. So if we are going to select projects there, we'd like to probably look at projects there that are going to be relatively easy to deliver over that period of time there, rather than picking, I guess, nice to have projects there, but ones that might require a fair bit of community consultation or approvals and the like. So it's a process that we're going through at the moment. We are looking at the criteria there, and we are looking at a number of different projects there. They have to be projects that aren't actually already listed in our current Capital Works program. So there's a number of those that actually fit into our long-term plans, our five-year plan there. So they're the ones we'll be looking at first. So yes, it's a bit of a work in progress at the moment.
Thank you very much for the update. My second question is in regards to bike lockers at the wetlands. I'm wondering, do council staff monitor these in regards to that people don't leave their bikes there for long-term parking?
Mr. Reeve.
Through you, Mayor. We don't do any active monitoring of the bike lockers, in terms of actually making sure that there's not bikes that are just left there. And I guess if there's any identified issues that come up like that, then we treat them on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, thank you. The next question, I have quite a few questions related to the same topic, and it's regarding roadside spraying. Mayor, is that okay if I just ask all of the questions that might need to be taken on notice? If I just go ahead with all the questions. So my first one is, how often does roadside spraying occur across Kingborough? And the second one is, how do we notify community when this will occur? How often do people apply for opt-out of roadside spraying? I understand it's 2 years. Have we thought about increasing it to 3 years? How do we notify community members of that roadside spraying is up for renewal? What is the product used for roadside spraying, and what is the volume used, and does it vary from area to area?
I think we want to take that on notice. I'll just check with the General Manager. General Manager?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Yes, we'll have to take that on notice because there is quite a bit of detail involved in the response.
Thanks, General Manager.
Thank you very much.
Any further questions, Councillor?
I have one more regarding Drew Point. I visited Drew Point today and it was amazing. The facility was looking absolutely wonderful. And I'm just wondering if staff have been spending extra time there recently, or is it due to perhaps low community usage of the area? The amenities and the grass and the dog area, it was just exceptional standards. So thank you very much for staff. But I'm just wondering, is that normal practice or have we gone above and beyond?
Mr. Reeve.
through you, Mayor. I believe it's probably because we haven't been getting the same sort of usage down through there, but obviously that's one of our high-profile parks there, so we do make sure that we put lots of love and attention into it. So I guess it's been a combination of both of those.
Thank you. Questions in closed session, Mayor?
A question without notice in closed session?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Okay, are there any further questions without notice from councillors?
Yes, please, Mayor.
Councillor Loss.
I have a question which is direct to the General Manager. It's at a workshop some weeks ago, we spoke of department managers finding a 5% saving in their proposed budget allocations for the coming year. Has this been referred to managers, and if so, what has been the result?
Mr. Arnold.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. I think it's fair to say, Councillor Wass, that the management team are still working through the draft budget, particularly in light of the recent decision of Council following the Legat General Meeting that has led to Council adopting a zero general rate increase next year. We're awaiting the final submissions from the community, and a workshop has been scheduled with Council prior to the special Council meeting for the budget to be held on the 15th of June. And that will give Council's management team the opportunity to respond in detail to that question, Councillor Loss.
Thank you.
Any further questions without notice from councillors? Okay, doesn't sound like there are any further questions without notice, so we'll move on to questions on notice from councillors. On page 2, we have a review of bylaws from Councillor Bastone, or a question about a review of bylaws. And there's an officer's response there from Mr. Smee. And question 2 is on our workforce status from Councillor Westwood, with a response there from Ms. Penny Hughes. And with that, the open session of Council is adjourned at 5:54 p.m. And the Planning Authority will commence at 5:54 p.m. So reminding all councillors that we're now sitting as a planning authority, and the first item on the agenda is 13.1, and its day is 2019-36, a development application for a boundary adjustment at 225 Nebraska Road, North Bruny. Would anyone like to move and or second that motion?
So moved.
Moved by Councillor Wass.
Second.
Councillor Street's seconding, and Councillor Wass.
Thank you, Mayor. I think it's a fairly straightforward request for an application. It's for an application to simply reorganise the boundaries. There's no additional blocks being created, and I think the two lots will be better matched under the proposal. I understand from the report that the proposal satisfies all the relevant acceptable solutions and performance criteria, and therefore I recommend approval.
Any further contributions on this? I just briefly wanted to make a comment that I noted the representations were, there was quite a number, and that's why it's being dealt with here and as opposed to under delegation. It does seem like there's a communication issue or a misunderstanding from those representatives that we were creating additional lots. As Councillor Loss has said, there aren't any additional lots being put here. So with that in mind and the responses to those representations that are contained within the report, I have to agree with Councillor Loss that I think that's a pretty straightforward one. Councillor Loss, would you like to sum up?
No, thank you, Mayor. I think we've said it all. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so the motion as printed in the agenda and moved by Councillor Wass and seconded by Councillor Street is that the Planning Authority resolves that the development application for boundary adjustment at 225 Nebraska Road, North Bruny for Larkin Crease Proprietary Limited, be approved subject to the following conditions. And there are quite a few of them, I think. 14 of them. And so I'm now going to ask councillors to unmute themselves, and I'm going to run through the list and ask if you agree with this motion, please say yes. And if you disagree with the motion, please say no. Councillor Westwood.
Yes.
Councillor Bastone.
Yes.
Councillor Cordova.
Yes.
Councillor Fox.
Yes.
Councillor Grace. Sorry, Councillor Grace is not with us. Apologies. Councillor Midgley?
Yes.
Councillor Street?
Yes.
Councillor Loss?
Yes.
And Councillor Reet?
Yes.
And Councillor Winter is also a yes. The motion is carried unanimously. The Planning Authority session now adjourns. And the open session of council will now resume at 5:58 p.m. We now have notices of motion. The first notice of motion is 14.1, submitted by Councillor Westwood. Councillor Westwood, would you like to move that motion?
I would. Thank you, Mayor.
Would anyone like to second it?
Yes.
Councillor Street. Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. I would like to move that Council directs the General Manager to implement a 2.8% COVID-19 efficiency dividend across the organisation for all non-salary expenditure in 2020-21, excluding the pass-through of external funding from other sources, which does not impact Council's underlying results. The COVID-19 restrictions have impacted the Kimberley Council's financial position. There is no doubt about this. Like many other organisations, Council has been impacted and will continue to be impacted for years to come. Council's draft budget shows an estimated $4 million underlying deficit for next financial year, and Council needs to look for ways to try and minimise this as best we can. What Council can do, like most other organisations are having to do right across the world, is to focus on managing its budget as best as possible to try and minimise the financial fallout for current and for future ratepayers. When my household budget is tight or I'm saving for something like a holiday, I implement measures on a micro scale to use my income as best I can. I don't buy takeaway coffees, and I take my own lunch to work instead of buying it. And these seemingly small things add up over the course of a year and can make a big difference in the long run. Now, I understand Council as an organisation isn't the same as a household, but the same principle applies. Small savings here and there can and do add up. A bit of effort to look internally at how this organisation operates to ensure it is as efficient as possible can only be a good thing. Many households and businesses are analysing their spending at the moment, and councils and organisations should not be exempt from this. At the moment, there are no savings in council's draft budget for next financial year. Operational expenditure hasn't increased exponentially, but it certainly hasn't gone down. An efficiency dividend is an annual reduction in funding available to an organisation. Reduction is only for 1 year, and it's usually a percentage of operational costs. So in this case, the proposed 2.8% COVID-19 efficiency dividend equates to around $380,000 of Council's $13.5 million operational budget for next financial year, excluding depreciation and employee costs. This is my third budget since I've been elected to Council, and what I've learned is that councillors trying to find savings and projects to cut just doesn't work. We're a diverse group of 10 elected representatives, and we each have different priorities and different ideas about what is essential and what isn't when it comes to funding as part of the budget. Usually this diversity of thought is a strength as we debate issues, but when it comes to consensus budgeting, where a majority of councillors must agree, I've learnt that it just doesn't work. So the introduction of an efficiency dividend is a way of giving ownership and discretion to staff to find savings, where and how they can. So there is no prescribed way, apart from the direction that the savings are to be from council's operational budget and exclusive of salaries. My expectation is that the 2.8% would be distributed roughly evenly across each of council's departments as a percentage of their budget. I expect management to use their discretion if some activities are considered more essential than others. Then the general manager can use his judgment and allocate the savings target accordingly. This proposed COVID-19 efficiency dividend very deliberately does not include employee costs, which are estimated at around about $15 million next financial year. Council is a large employer in Kingborough, and many staff live in our municipality and spend their wages locally to support our local businesses. So I just want to be very clear to any staff that are listening tonight, this efficiency dividend is not a reflection of how much staff are or are not appreciated for the work they do, because it's very evident to me the value and pride that council staff put into caring for our community. Every job is important, and every member of staff plays a part in making our municipality what it is today. So this efficiency dividend very deliberately does not include cuts to salaries. It also does not include any cuts to council's capital works program. The council is budgeting to spend almost $11 million on capital works projects across our municipality next financial year, and this helps to stimulate the local economy and support jobs in our community. We are not in the same environment as we were in before the coronavirus pandemic hit. A COVID-19 efficiency dividend aims to achieve a balance between providing services to the community and a commitment to responsible financial management. So I ask my colleagues tonight to support this motion to help protect the future financial position of council for current and for future ratepayers. Thank you.
I don't have any further speakers yet. Councillor Cordo, you've unmuted. No,
or no, Councillor Fox. Okay.
Oh. Councillor Fox, then Councillor Cordo has that.
Thank you, Mayor Winter. I did put a request to respond in writing that it doesn't seem to have come through. Maybe I didn't press the little paper dart. I cannot support this motion. I'm sorry. And I'll read my notes. To evaluate an efficiency change, councillors need to understand the current service delivery levels. To achieve further deficiencies, council need to identify the level of service under the current budget and the level of efficiency of service under the current budget. These services include road repairs, grass mowing, reserve management, toilet cleaning, planning, engineering, finance, customer service, external contracts, social services, etc. Councillors should know current efficiencies of service delivery before directing the general manager to make an arbitrary change for an arbitrary amount. Rather than direct the general manager to implement an arbitrary efficiency level change, councillors should know the facts. Salaries cannot be excluded because they incur a major cost, as Councillor Westwood said. Efficiency as labour hours per unit of service delivery forms the core of council service delivery management. For example, frequency and level of grass mowing can vary seasonally, but by location or depending on the number of users. Efficient use of staff may allow an increase in service delivery and may allow a reduction in external costs. Efficiency may already have been achieved in many areas. The General Manager's response to the motion calculates the arbitrary amount of $380,000 based on the proposed arbitrary 2.8%, which is not based on a rational efficiency evaluation. Councillors should not be making decisions based on arbitrary numbers. Councillors need a routine report from management on service levels and costs in man hours and dollars per unit of service per ratepayer or users. Any potential efficiency or change of, any potential efficiency or service level change could then be evaluated on a rational basis. I would like to move an amendment, and that would be that council requests the general manager to prepare a report for consideration by council which identifies man hours and dollars per unit per user for current service levels across all departments and functions, potential efficiency changes, and potential service level changes. Thank you.
Councillor Fox, it sounds more like, would you be comfortable with foreshadowing that if this is lost? Because it's sort of quite different to the motion that's up there. Is that something you'd be comfortable with?
I'd like to see if there is support for my amendment during the course of the debate, but I don't see it as a direct opposite to the motion.
Okay. I want to seek some advice from the General Manager here. Are you comfortable with an amendment to in line with what Councillor Fox has said?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Whilst I appreciate Councillor Fox's comment, it does appear to me to be at odds with the notice of motion.
So could she foreshadow that if this is lost, then move that the motion that she's just suggested?
I think that would be the correct way forward, Mr. Mayor.
Councillor Fox, are you comfortable with that?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Do you want to continue with your contribution or be concluded?
No, I think that'll be fine for me. I guess what I'm concerned about is the magnitude of what is being required here. 380,000 is a lot of money to be found, and considering we've just reduced our budget to a 0% increase, it might actually be impossible to find that amount. And by directing our general manager to do so without really giving a political guidance as to how, I think it's also abrogating our responsibility as councillors, because that is our role. I don't see that as being something we can pass on to the general manager. I feel there should be consensus around the table, and there should be discussion and even community consultation on this matter. I just feel that it is too big an amount in the scheme of the budget to be demanding that our general manager find these savings. We can try and do it in-house, but I feel that is the councillor's role. Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you kindly, Mayor. I won't be supporting this, and the reason is that a council budget is not like a household budget. So that's what we've heard as the central premise so far, is that if you at home save money, if I at home save some money, if I don't go to the coffee shop once a week, I might save $5 or $10 a week, and that way I have more savings. But what it misses out is the fallacy of composition, what they call in economics the paradox of thrift. Yes, it is true that if I don't go to the coffee shop, I save some money. But if everyone in the community doesn't go to the coffee shop goes broke, people lose their jobs. So what we're talking about here is a paradox of thrift question. An efficiency dividend is a cut. It's an annual reduction in funding. So let's call it what it is. It's a cut of proposed here, arbitrarily, I might add, $380,000. So the question here is, what is the goal? Is the goal to cut deficit just for deficit's sake? Or is the goal of the council to run with sound fiscal management? If it is the latter, then I have the confidence in our budgeting process so far. When we ran through our workshops, when we discussed the budget in the council, we have so far heard, and I have asked multiple questions on this, about recurring deficits and potential revenue in a few years coming, and what the likelihood is of being able to pay it off. And I have been given supreme confidence by our Chief Financial Officer that we are indeed in a relatively safe position. So the real question here is that of specificity. do we have a proposal before us that recommends cutting a certain amount of money from, say, the turf budget or a certain amount of money from what have you? No, we don't. We have a very amorphous expectation that we have to randomly cut a certain amount from everybody's budget. So it's a bit like asking the staff, which appendage do they want to cut off? You know, you've got 10 fingers, which of your fingers do you want to lose? I know for a fact that we are a lean council. We are a for-purpose organisation, which means we are here to serve the community. And at the end of the day, the reason why this fallacy of composition, the reason why this paradox of thrift concept is so important is that what is true for one household is not true for an entire organisation like Kingborough Council. So imagine you're at a theatre. It is true that if one person stands up while they're an audience member in a theatre, it is true that they can see better. But if everybody in the theatre stands up at the same time, everybody sees worse. And this is exactly what this agenda item is trying to achieve. It is trying to cut 2.8% across an entire organisation. And what are we going to cut? Well, is it going to be stormwater drain inspections? Is it going to be CCTV maintenance? Is it going to be the Southern Metro Bicycle Program or NRM or weed control? Which is it going to be light and power? Is it going to be heating? There is absolutely no specificity in this, and so it would be reckless to try and randomly take a big hatchet at the budget. If you look at this notion of fiscal contraction expansion, this is the kind of thing that the International Monetary Fund has been doing all across the world, and it never works. Austerity never works. If you want to recover from a crisis, the best way to do it is to have fiscal expansion. So what you want to do is increase aggregate demand, not decrease it. The fundamental difference between Kingborough Council and a household is that a household can only take on debt for 30 years. And the reason for that is that at the end of somebody's life, they have to pay back all their debts and the bank expects them to do that. Kingborough Council will live a lot longer than an individual. In fact, the City of London is 1,000 years old, so they've been able to roll over their debts for 1,000 years now. So they're not like a household in that respect. Kingborough Council will be here a lot longer than any individual, and that's why we have the capacity to borrow at low interest, to take care of our finances, to operate in a sound fiscal environment, and be responsible over a long period of time whilst maintaining adequate services to the constituents who elected us. Furthermore, we as a council set our revenue to some extent because we apply rates, general rates, across the municipality. I don't know of any individual in my circle who can set their own salary. So there's another reason why a council budget is not in any way like a household budget, because lenders know that a council has the capacity to raise rates or reduce rates as they see fit. A bank knows that the credit rating of a council is a lot better than the credit rating of an individual. So that's another reason why the Kingborough Council is in no way like a household budget. Now, even if we were like a household budget, which I proved to you that we aren't, imagine if you have a big crack in your wall or a big hole in your roof that's causing some flooding. It is much cheaper to get it fixed right away rather than having some random arbitrary amount that you cut. It will cost you a lot more in the long run. Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks, Councillor Cordova. I don't have anyone else yet on the list who'd like to go next.
I'll speak, Mayor.
Councillor Street.
And I intend to keep my contribution on this relatively short. Mayor, scarcely, if ever, will any person in any work group, whether it's private or public sector, admit that they have surplus resources or even, frankly, adequate resources to do a particular job. And now, I say that not as an indictment on our staff, who, by and large, do an amazing job with the resources that we provide to them. But that's the key point. They do it with the resources that we provide to them and that ratepayers provide to them. And they do it as set by councillors. The reality, though, is this, I think, is very difficult to know what the truly efficient cost of any public service is without there being some budgetary pressure on the managers expected to deliver those outcomes. And that's what this efficiency dividend would do. It would put that budgetary pressure on our managers to make sure that the services are being delivered at an efficient cost. And those savings will be delivered at a time when we have absolutely scarcely needed them more than we do today. And I don't think it's fair to suggest that our managers shouldn't operate without that budgetary pressure either. These people are skilled professionals, many of whom and most of whom have been in local government for a long period of time. To suggest that they can't operate with that pressure or shouldn't be expected to operate with that pressure, I don't think is right, and I actually don't think it's fair comment on their professionalism either as local government professionals. And I say this to Councillor Fox and Councillor Cordova. I think it's because of this, the natural inclination towards not admitting that we've got surplus resources that makes it impossible to really know whether or not a report that we get shows efficient service delivery and where those cuts can be made. And frankly, I don't believe and I don't trust the councillors as a group to really know when looking at a budget where those savings should be made. I do trust our professional staff to know where those savings can be made, though, and how those savings can be made without affecting the overall service delivery of council. The efficiency dividend gives our managers the permission to change their resource allocation where there's rarely any impetus for them to do so. Another one of those natural inclinations is the ain't broke, don't fix it inclination. Well, we're not suggesting that it's broke, but what we are suggesting is that we're running into a time where we need the savings, and now would be a good time to revisit your resource allocations and make sure that you are doing things as efficiently as possible. This is not an attack on anybody. It's a recognition of the fact that we need these savings now more than we ever have. And at least in my time on council, there hasn't been a real questioning of staff and managerial staff as to whether or not services are being delivered effectively. Now, we may well get to the end of 12 months and the full efficiency dividend hasn't been realised. I hope that's not the case. But what I will say is this, if it hasn't been realised, I'll be expecting very good explanations about why that's not the case. So we put the pressure on. If the pressure's too much, then we may well need to revisit the dividend in the future. But the key here is that the pressure has to be on to start off with, or otherwise our ratepayers will never know whether the services are being delivered efficiently or not. And I leave on this point, and it's something that I'm a crack record on it, but it's very easy to forget that every dollar that council has comes out of the pocket of a ratepayer. A ratepayer just like you and me, a mum, a dad, a grandparent, a pensioner, every dollar that we have is a dollar taken from them. And so we owe it to them to make sure that we're delivering services as efficiently as possible. And we owe it to them as well to make sure that council's doing their bit to find savings at a time when we need them. I commend the motion to council.
Councillor Reese.
Thank you, Mayor. And I apologise, I won't put my video on, so I'll just have to be the speaking voice, but I'm feeling unwell tonight, so I'll keep my contribution brief. Thank you to Councillor Westwood for bringing this notice of motion, because since 2011, when I was first elected, I have been advocating the need for an efficiency dividend and a serious look at the spending in our budget from year to year, and I have been like a broken record and unfortunately in past years have not been able to win the support of the majority of my colleagues to enable this to happen. The reason I believe that it can and should happen is that I've seen efficiency dividends operate effectively without the public who receive services ever knowing that they were actually put in place. When I first became Education Minister in 1998, we had to bring down a state budget within a matter of months. And we were told by the Treasurer that we would have a certain number of efficiency dividends for each of the departments. As Minister for Education, my department was hit very, very hard. I think from memory it was $20 million, but I'd have to go back and check. And initially, my own thoughts straight away went to this cannot be done without impacting on service delivery, without impacting on our teachers and our students and our many variety of clients throughout the education portfolio that included libraries and youth and archives and the training sector. What I soon learned was that it was possible for that to take place. And of course, the initial response from the senior managers within the education department were to present me with a list of things that they knew would be politically unpalatable and that would impact on service delivery. And so we asked them to go back and have a reconsideration of what was possible. What they then came up with was a list of things that I would equate to be the fat. They were things that were able to be cut that enabled us to meet the budget targets that we had to have, and nobody was ever the wiser that any of these things had been done. And in subsequent years, you know, 8 years later, after having talked to the Deputy Secretary of Corporate Services at the time, he used to say to me, and I quote, "It's all about the ons and offs, Minister." And that does sound like a line from Yes, Minister, because it made me understand that within any large organisation, and that is exactly what the Kingborough Council is, that there is the capacity to have flexibility within each of the areas and a little bit of fat that is there for a rainy day. Well, unlike Councillor Cordova, I don't want to have ratepayers of the Kingborough Council in debt for the next 1,000 years, as he seems to have been suggesting tonight. And I also think that the comparisons that he made in relation to Councillor Westwood's analogy of household expenditure was greatly unfair, because that wasn't the whole premise of her argument. But what she was saying is that it makes economic sense that in times of toughness, that every organisation, whether they be a charity, a government department or individuals, take a significant look at their budget and see what efficiencies can be made so that they can continue to operate effectively in the future for the best value for themselves and their customers. And in this case, as Councillor Street said, the customers are our ratepayers. We owe it to them to do this now, and particularly for generations to come in the future, so that we aren't in debt and continue to be in debt in the future. So I support this motion, and I thank Councillor Westwood for bringing it tonight.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you also for everybody for sharing.
Just before you do that, I'm sorry, just saying, Councillor Cordova, did you, I've seen your comment, did you want to say anything or?
Yes, thanks, Mayor. What I was saying is about the longevity of councils, but I was not advocating a policy prescription for Kingborough Council to be in debt for 1,000 years, and I think anybody that was listening would see that it's a clear mischaracterisation of what I was saying and quite offensive. Thank you, Mayor.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. When this motion came forward, I couldn't help but recall our advice and comments from councillors regarding the long-term financial plan, and the fact that we listen to the expertise of our financial staff in council. So I am actually quite interested to hear from council staff in response to this budget, this motion that is put forward tonight.
So Mr. Breen or Mr. Arnold, or both?
Through you, Chair. I guess my comments would be that Council, I guess over the last 10 years at least, has been moving to attempt to achieve an underlying surplus. So over that period of time, there's been a lot of focus on our costs, our expenditure, and a lot of effort has been put into trying to minimise costs wherever possible. And a lot of our discussions are generally around ways that we can undertake activities at minimum cost levels. one of the issues we have with the council is that the majority of our costs, well, sorry, not the majority, but a lot of our costs we have very little control over. And I'm talking about things there like power, like telephone. We have a lot of contracted services, all very difficult to make cuts in because you're generally committed for the year. However, saying that, there are a number of costs where we attempt to estimate what we think the cost will be, and we do have some control over those outcomes. And I'm talking about things that are like advertising and marketing, community consultation, legal fees, donations, use of consultants, some of the art prizes, those sort of things, training, building, maintenance. So a lot of these areas we make estimates. Some will be, something like building maintenance, there will be costs there that are sort of proactive maintenance. But other costs associated with perhaps upgrades that we can have a look at. So certainly we've been sort of looking at those and targeting those areas to see where there may be some cost savings for us in attempting to get to this $380,000 figure. But ultimately, I think where the savings will come from to achieve this amount will be, we'll have to look at things like some of the events that we have. You know, do we have events in the next 12 months given the crisis that we're in? We'll have to look at things like some of our projects. I guess projects typically sit in the environmental area. So we'll have to review those to see if there's some savings there. Programs tend to be either community services or in engineering, something like road safety programs. There's savings within those. Do we continue to cover the breadth of services that we've got? And there's always that issue around service delivery levels. Certainly some of the things we've been starting to have a bit of a look at is some of our contracted costs. If we could reduce those down, what are the impacts on the service delivery that we're offering to the community? So I think that's the issue that we've got. These things will always turn into some sort of diminishing of service across the municipality. So we're certainly turning our mind towards this, achieving this particular outcome. I think there's no doubt that we don't believe that we can continue to offer all the services, all the projects, all the programs, events that we're offering at the moment and find $380,000 worth of savings.
Councillor Midgley, you continue.
Thank you, Mr. Breen, for that insight. And my understanding really is that we are a lean machine, and I do understand the motion that is put forward. It is important during this time especially to look for savings, and there is sometimes some fat, but not the 380,000 of fat across council. I feel like it will put some strain and stress amongst our staff in Kingborough Council. And as Mr. Breen said, the loss of some projects that are very important and significant to the community. I have another question, Mayor, and I'm wondering, we had a budget workshop, from my understanding, I did not really see any sort of consideration of perhaps programs that could be cutting even a little bit of fat, like maybe if it is just 1%. I'm wondering at all, had staff considered that when they brought that first budget after 0% to us? Has there been any consideration or any thorough look around any sort of savings at all? If it's not the 380,000, is there any other savings perhaps that might have been identified since we have last met?
Mr. Breen.
Through the chair, at this stage, I guess we're working through all the options that are available to us to see what can be done. Certainly, we've been able to, by just going through some of those expense areas, identify some savings. At this stage, we haven't been able to come up with a number because we've still got a number of areas that are being investigated at the moment.
Thank you. So I will not support this motion as written, but I would like staff and the general manager and managers to consider for our next budget workshop to have a really thorough look. If it's not the 2.8%, then perhaps it is 1%. Perhaps it is a little bit of fat, and a little bit of savings that we can find. That's what I would like to move forward on. I have no amendment to a motion. I have no motion, another motion in regards to that, but that would be a recommendation and perhaps a consideration for staff to put forward for when we next meet. Thank you, Mayor.
Thanks. At the moment, I don't have any further speakers that have let me know. There's still a few speakers that haven't spoken.
Yes, I have.
Sorry. Councillor Bastone.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. I did actually put my name on the list, but something must have happened again.
It'd be my fault. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sure it's not. I won't be supporting this motion. Unlike Councillor Reid, I've been on the front line when education budgets have been cut, and the FAT, as she calls it, is often the difference between ticking the boxes or providing an excellent education. And excellent education is something Tasmania hasn't in the past managed to achieve. I think what we end up with is a bare minimum versus quality, and I think that's what will happen to the Kingborough Council. We'll provide a service, but will it be something we can be proud of? We'll be back to roads, rates and rubbish, and that's not really what we've been proud of. We've been very proud of all the things that we have been able to do, the climate change work, and I can just see everything here going back to bare minimum if we support this. So, unfortunately, I cannot support it. Thank you.
Further speakers, and apologies, Councillor Stone, I have now seen your comment and I've missed it. Further speakers. Okay, look, from my perspective, look, we are going to run a large deficit next year. The draft budget shows a $4 million deficit. If you want to know how significant that is, it's about 10% of our annual revenue, which is a huge amount, and haven't gone into the archives to see how it stacks up against other deficits, but I suspect it's, if not the largest deficit in percentage terms, certainly is nominally, but it would be amongst the largest. So irrespective of this decision, we are going to run a large deficit, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't try and limit the damage and the debt as much as we can this financial year. The level of saving that Councillor Westwood has put forward is not an arbitrary number. 2.8% is the amount that the budget, that our rates revenue was supposed to go up next financial year. And that $380,000 is around 1% of our revenue, and it's around 10% of our draft budget deficit. So it's not arbitrary. It's also not outrageously large. It's pretty reasonable. State governments have asked and successfully achieved much greater, and I don't think it's a hugely ambitious target. I think to make it sound like if we were to drop 1% of our expenditure, we would somehow change the fundamentals of what sort of council we are and what sort of services we provide is a bit of an overreach. That said, I know it will be challenging, and it'll be challenging because this hasn't been done before, certainly it hasn't been done in the last 9 years, because even though I've only been here for six of them, I have heard Councillor Reid, who's been championing this approach for a long time, and I particularly like the part of Councillor Westwood's motion where she rules out any cuts to staff, and that's always been used as a bit of a warning for people is you'll lose staff. Well, the motion specifically rules out cutting any staff, and also want to acknowledge at this point that in that light, that the general manager's been very strong, and he's told all of our staff that they're all required. And even today, I was pleased to walk around the Civic Centre and see that we had redeployed staff from the Kimberley Sports Centre, directing traffic through the Civic Centre. And I thought that was a great way to utilise all of our staff and make sure that everyone was doing valuable work. This is relatively easy for another reason, and that is that Councillor Westwood's motion is really talking about a one-off a one-off reduction in expenditure. These aren't looking for ongoing reductions that are going to go for years and years. This is a one-off year. We know that we haven't increased our rates this year, and that makes things particularly difficult. We also know that that next year we need to limit our debt as much as possible. I have to say I agree with Councillor Reed's approach to debt in that we should try and limit it as much as possible. Councillor Cordova spoke about a lack of specificity, and that's exactly what the intention of this is. Councillor Westwood's motion is deliberately lacking in specifics because her approach is to say to managers, look, here's a target we want you to approach our budget with and do your best to find savings that are equivalent to 2.8% or $380,000 across an organisation with a $40 million budget. Again, I don't think that's unreasonable. Councillor Cordova used the word randomly. Again, this is not random. This is managers of council finding the best way to find savings in an extremely difficult financial circumstance. So for all these reasons, the one thing I want to go back to is that from the draft budget we saw back in early March to the draft budget that's now out for public consultation, there is not a large difference in the amount of expenditure. There's no savings have been presented, and Councillor Midgley made that point herself. If we want, and Councillor Midgley even used the term 1%, why aren't we looking at 1%? Well, actually, Councillor Midgley, that's what Councillor Westwood's motion does. It asks our council staff to find savings equivalent to 1%. I don't think that's unreasonable. In fact, I think it is a decent approach, and it shows our community that we're committed to limiting the debt that is going to be imposed on future generations as much as possible. Councillor Westwood, to sum up.
Thank you, Mayor, and thank you, everyone, for your contributions. Look, we are facing a $4 million budget deficit, and to do nothing would be remiss, I think. As has been pointed out, between the first version of the budget we were presented with before the COVID-19 really bit, compared to this version that's now out for consultation, there has not been any savings identified. And every year I go through the budget with a fine-tooth comb and try and find savings, and it's very, very difficult to do because, you know, as alluded to in the contribution from many, everything that council does is really important. But that is no excuse for us as an organisation not to look at what we do and how we do it and whether we can do it more efficiently. I think we have a responsibility to our ratepayers to make sure we are being efficient. The 2.8% is not an arbitrary figure. It is definitely not an arbitrary figure. There have certainly been higher percentages proposed and lower percentages tonight, but the 2.8% is directly linked to Council's long-term financial plan, which was approved by the majority of councillors after we were all elected, barring perhaps Councillor Cordova. 2.8% is what our budget is predicated on, and that's the increase in rates, which is roughly in line with the Consumer Price Index, which represents an increase in the cost of Council delivering its services. So the 2.8% is linked to our long-term financial plan. We have foregone that increase in our rates revenue this year because in trying to help our community and in helping our businesses, we are capping rate increases at 0%. But these things come at a cost. And instead of trying to cut our capex, instead of trying to cut staff, this is the one thing I can think of that council can do $380,000 out of its operational budget. It is not a huge ask. Once you quarantine capital expenditure and salaries, it's not a huge ask. And maybe it can't be achieved, but we will never know unless we try. There is a notice of motion coming up that asks us to use some savings towards this end of the financial year to do something else. There is always a little bit of money that's left over that can be made savings. And just to pull Councillor Cordova up on a point, no, I did acknowledge that council is not like a household. Council is an organisation and we will be here forever. but I won't be here forever. My children will be, and my grandchildren will be. And if we can do something now to minimise the pain that future ratepayers are subjected to, then we really have a responsibility to do whatever we can with minimal disruption. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Councillor Westwood. So we just to remind everyone, we do have a foreshadowed motion from Councillor Fox. So if it's lost, we will go to the foreshadowed motion. But the motion was moved by Councillor Westwood, seconded by Councillor Street. And it's that, and if councillors can start unmuting themselves now as I read the motion, it's that council directs the general manager to implement a 2.8% COVID-19 efficiency dividend across the organisation for all non-salary expenditure in 2020-21, excluding the pass-through of external funding from other sources, which does not impact council's underlying results. So I'm going to run through that list again and ask councillors to say yes if they agree with the motion and no if they do not. And I'll start with Councillor Westwood.
Yes.
Councillor Bastain.
No.
Councillor Cordova.
No.
Councillor Fox.
No.
Councillor Midgley.
No.
Councillor Street.
Yes.
Councillor Watts.
Yes.
Councillor Reid.
Yes.
And Councillor Winter is also a yes. That means there are 5 yes votes and 4 no votes. And so the motion is carried. I just noticed Ms. Morton has been typing it up on the screen, which is very helpful. Thank you. The next item is 14.2, elected member allowances 2020-21, response to COVID-19, and it's actually from me. So at this point, I'm going to hand over the chairmanship of the meeting to the Deputy Mayor, Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. The next item is a notice of motion from yourself, Councillor Winter, elected member allowances 2020-21, response to COVID-19. Would you like to move this motion? Councillor
yes.
Winter? Thank you. Please go ahead.
I need a seconder though.
Do I have a seconder for this motion?
Yes, I'll second it.
Thank you, Councillor Bastain.
Thanks, Deputy Mayor. Look, the reason, as councillors will know, that on 2 occasions I've raised this with councillors in a workshop because I feel like there is an issue coming, and that is that under the state legislation, councillors will be due for a increase in our allowances next financial year. If anyone wants to see the methodology, it is probably too complex to go through now, but there's a formula on through the Department of Premier Cabinet's local government division, and talks about the Tasmanian June quarter wage price index for a current year versus the previous year, and that what that will do is increase council allowances if unhindered by probably greater than 2%. I haven't, the June quarter's not out yet, so we don't know exactly, but presumably it would be at least 2%, potentially higher. And for that to happen in this climate, I think would be out of step with community expectation, out of step with what's happening in local government, and out of step with what we're doing with our rates. As we know, we've capped our rates at 0%, which has put huge pressure on our budget. We have tried to make some small savings tonight, which I think will help, but every little bit does help, and it's about not only protecting our budget, but also about making sure we set standards. I'm aware that across local government, across Tasmania, many tough decisions have been made. I'm very pleased that our general manager has been able to say to our staff that you're all required, but unfortunately general managers in other areas haven't been able to make that same statement. But I also know that general managers across the state are dealing with an inability to provide increases in wages for staff. So staff across the state have been expecting and receiving increases of above 2% per year, and we're not sure what's going to happen with our own staff in that regard, but I suspect it's going to be tough for us to continue to provide that sort of increase in salary. for them over coming years. So what this motion does is two things. It firstly makes a statement that this council says to the state government that it believes that we shouldn't receive an increase for next financial year. That's not asking for anyone to take a cut, it just means we're not getting an increase next year. And secondly, a motion of council can't force every councillor here to not accept an increase if one is made available under legislation. But what we can do is provide every councillor with the information so that they can make their own personal decision on whether or not they believe they should accept an increase next year. Because I'm moving this motion, it's pretty obvious that I won't be. And I encourage other elected members to take a similar approach. Just given the situation that we're in, it's not something I like to do. I'm not intending to make any public comment about it. This is something for us internally to show our staff that we're very serious about savings, that we understand we're in a precarious financial situation. Thank you, Deputy Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. I have stated before that I feel that this matter is not something that should be before council. It's ultra vires, in my opinion, which means it's outside our jurisdiction. It implies that we have an influence over our salaries, which we do not. It's a state government decision. It's not our decision. We don't have a role in setting the salaries, and neither do we have a role in what's been decided by government, which is that it is CPI indexed every year, and that is something we acknowledge when we are elected. There are already processes in place. If a councillor does not want to accept their allowance or any part of their allowance, they are able to do so. But I think it's inappropriate for council to hold a position on this unless the minister asks for the community to have a say, or for councils to have a say, which in this case he has not. So I personally think it's ultra vires, and I will not be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Similarly with Councillor Fox, this item of the agenda recommends lobbying the state government to alter council allowances. My understanding is that council allowances are set by the state government under Regulation 42.2 of the Local Government General Regulations 2015. I feel very strongly that a councillor has no business advocating either for or against the amount of their own allowance on the floor of a council meeting. Initially, I thought that this was actually a conflict of interest, having councillors talk about their own allowances and try to lobby in left, right, up, down. It doesn't matter. You don't want to set a precedent normalising councillors having any kind of role when it should be an independent arbiter that decides what councillors' allowances should be. It should have nothing to do with councillors around this table. However, I've been advised that it's not a conflict of interest because there is an explicit exemption under Section 52.1 of the Local Government Act, which states that this part does not apply to a councillor if, quote, the matter relates to any allowance or expense payable to all councillors. So even though there is an explicit carve-out in the legislation that allows for councillors to talk about it, most people wouldn't know about the carve-out. I didn't know about that carve-out until researching for this debate. I do know about the pub test, though, and it feels very unsanitary that councillors are trying to lean in and get involved on setting their allowances. I don't think a councillor is the best person to judge the rate of their own allowance. I think that should be left to independent review. And indeed, in 2018, there was an independent review by the Tasmanian Industrial Commission into council allowances. Now, I welcome the independent regulator or the state government to initiate another independent review. I think that's a fine idea. More power to them if that's what they choose to do. But I do not support councillors getting involved, and so I won't be participating in this vote. I will be abstaining from this vote because I don't believe that councillors should have any say in what the allowance should be, and I would hope that the minutes would record that abstention accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I might actually just ask for some advice from the General Manager. Is it possible to abstain from voting at this point in time, given no conflict or was raised at the start of the meeting?
Through you, Deputy Mayor, it is possible to abstain, but of course any abstention from voting is a vote in the negative. and will be recorded as such in the minutes.
Thank you, General Manager. Councillor Street, got you up next.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. If Councillor Cordova would like to speak about the pub test, then I think there's a really important pub test here. You go to the pub when they're open and ask the punters in a pub whether they think that at the minute, with everything that's going on in the community and in our economy, they think we should be taking an automatic pay rise. That's the real pub test here, and I guarantee you that the result that you get will be absolutely not. This is about sharing the pain with our ratepayers. It's about sharing the pain with our staff, who we've just asked to make an efficiency dividend as well. Fully accept that we can't set the policy on our own salary and our own allowance. Nobody has ever suggested that we attempt to do that. It's not ultra vires to lobby the state government for a particular view. It's not certainly not ultra vires for council to take a particular position on any policy matter. And the councillors who've spoken against the motion so far have previously asked this council to take policy positions on things that have far less to do with local government than council allowances do. So I commend the motion to council, and I ask all councillors to reflect upon what our ratepayers really expect of us in making this decision this evening.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Councillor Reid.
Thank you. I almost felt like putting my hand down then to say I wouldn't speak because Councillor Street has very well articulated exactly what I was going to say. And that is that if we want to bring into it something like a pub test, then I think that if you were to ask anybody in the pub when they reopen that, should we be getting an increase in our councillor's allowance, given the level of financial hardship that exists for both individuals and businesses right around Tasmania, right around Australia at the moment, then the answer would be a resounding no. And we have talked on the previous motion about the fact that the council itself, that some of us who voted for that motion would like to see us taking some, making some efficiencies in order to operate more effectively. And I believe as councillors, we should also be stepping up. I see absolutely nothing wrong from a legal perspective, as Councillor Street has said, that we can't have an opinion on this matter and that we can't lobby the state government to defer a consideration given the highly unusual circumstances that we find ourselves in. So I will be supporting the motion that has been put forward by Councillor Winter.
Thank you, Councillor Reid. Do we have any other speakers? That being the case, for my contribution, I also echo the sentiments of Councillor Street and Reach. I think this would never pass a pub test. If you ask anyone in the pub or on the street if councillors, if politicians should be getting any kind of pay increase in the current environment, I think we would have an absolutely resounding no as an answer. We can't set the policy parameters, but we can lead by example, as the Mayor alluded to. It is not appropriate for councillors to be advocating for any increase in their allowance. It is set by the state government, but we don't have to accept that. We have just asked the organisation to make an efficiency dividend of 2.8%. The foregone increase in our allowance is probably less than that. But anything we can do as elected members to help the budget of council is something that I think we should do. And I absolutely am positive that this would pass any pub test anywhere in Tasmania.
Madam Chair.
Yes, sorry, Councillor Woss, would you like to make a contribution?
Yes, please. I'm sorry, I should say Len to press the button.
That's all right, sorry.
Look, often we talk about ourselves being the closest form of government to the people, but I would certainly confirm that. There are a number of people out in our community doing it very, very tough, and they're going to continue doing it tough. likewise, they're going to be some well-paid people, and I have no problems with them, that are going to take pay rises perhaps in the next 12 months and will continue to what their business wants them to do, and will remunerate them accordingly. But getting back to the level of government, as closest to the people, I think as a sign of goodwill, a sign of gesture, that councillors do in fact consider the community in all of its deliberations. I think what better way can we, by agreeing and supporting this motion, support the motion, which will show the community that we do care, we are taking our part of the pain, and maybe, who knows, it might even rub onto state and federal politics, that those members might also do the same rather than have their increases done automatically. So on that basis, I would urge other councillors to support this recommendation.
Thank you, Councillor Woss. And just to check, is there anyone else who would like to make a contribution? Okay, Councillor Winter, would you like to sum up?
Thanks, Deputy Mayor. Thank you for those contributions. I just wanted to just touch on a couple of those contributions from Councillor Cordova, Councillor Fox, and that was that local government members shouldn't be involved in the setting of their own pay, and I agree with that in normal circumstances. This is not a normal circumstance, though. Next financial year is going to be an extraordinary financial year for this council, probably an extraordinary year for the economy, and it's very clear that we have a limited amount of money to spend. It's very clear that members of our community are going to either be more than usual, are going to be either without employment or with reduced employment. And for that reason, as community leaders, as Councillor Woss said, I think it would be important and expected from our community to not be seeking or receiving a pay rise. But that said, this is a one-off. This would be likely, I think, a one-off year where this happens, and we should go back to normal as quickly as possible and allow the independent process to take place. But we're not advocating here for self-interest. We're actually advocating against our self-interest. The other point I wanted to make is that there's been a long-standing debate within local government, with local government members arguing for superannuation for themselves through the Local Government Association of Tasmania. And even last year, I heard a passionate contribution from a mayor at a Local Government Association of Tasmania meeting, arguing for higher, for more allowances. It's been something that has happened, and it's happened because it's allowed under the Act that Councillor Cordova alludes to. I think I don't want to go back over the pub test again because others have, but I just wanted to reiterate that in my experience, I am someone that enjoys going to the pub and enjoys talking to people there and getting the feedback, and I think the expectation, no, I know the expectation would be the councillors would take an approach of showing some restraint and not accepting a pay rise during a really difficult time. And so I really appreciate everyone's contribution, and I hope that the motion is supported by as many of you as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Winter. I'll go down the list again. If councillors could unmute themselves and say yay or nay when their name's called out. Councillor Winter?
Yes.
Myself, Councillor Westwood, yes. Councillor Bastone?
Yes.
Councillor Cordova has decided not to participate. So, Councillor Fox?
No, thank you.
Hold on, excuse me. It's a yes. You asked the question about abstain being registered as negative after I gave my contribution. So, I rather than be seen as the negative, I vote yes to this. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley?
Yes.
Councillor Street?
Aye.
Councillor Woss?
Yes.
And Councillor Reid?
Yes.
Thank you. I'll hand the position of chair back over to the mayor.
Thanks, Deputy Mayor. And now I need to find where we're up to. It's a notice of motion, and I'm sure that it will appear on the screen. It's the Howden Public Space motion from Councillor Midgley. Councillor Midgley, would you like to move it?
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I'd like to move.
Someone like to second it?
I'll second.
Second, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So the notice is that Council investigate the purchase of a parcel of land currently for sale at Bonnievale Estate, Howden, for public open space, and a report on the outcome of this investigation be provided to the Council meeting on 25th of June 2020. So, Mayor, the reason why I put this motion forward is there has been some regrets on Council, and there's also a realisation that we're on Council to do our bit and to try. I live in Howden. I've been in Howden for almost 16 years, and the matter of public open space and a playground in Howden has been something that the community has been interested in for decades. In fact, I know one of my neighbours was a very strong advocate in that, but now the children are in their sort of, you know, early 30s, and she was advocating for that when there was young children. In the new Bonnievale development, there's a lot of new families there. Yeah. As I've said in the background information, children are playing on the footpaths, on the streets, and there has been recent subdivision. And one of my regrets was not door knocking around the neighbourhood and encouraging them to put in a submission regarding the subdivision and perhaps voicing their views. I didn't do that because I didn't want to have the conflict of interest and not vote, but going back, I think I would have actually done that, because the community doesn't really know, unless it's sort of happening, I guess, right next door, or it's impacting on their neighbour or their fence, they sometimes don't realise that they can actually have a little voice and a say, that they could actually write to council and ask. It would be really great if there was a public open space in their local community. The roads are only getting busier. It has been really amazing during COVID to be able to walk and ride around safely, but just the last week, just walking around today, there's no way that you'd want your children, walking down the road to the public open spaces that are there on their own, or riding their bikes and things on their own. So often we're in the car driving everywhere to get from place to place. There could be an opportunity within this vicinity. The motion is just requesting a report to look at if there is an opportunity. Perhaps I've missed that there could be. Perhaps there is something that I don't know about. It is also part of the public open space strategy in regards to, I know it's only a medium point, but living here, knowing my local, that's what we're here. We're here to try for our whole community and even try harder for our local, because we know where we live and understand the issues a bit more personally. It's about just requesting a report to find out if there is a possibility. I understand we have massive financial constraints as well, but we do have a public open space budget, and that's what my motion is about. It's about the health and wellbeing of our community, me giving a voice to our community and having a try. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you for that. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I thank Councillor Midgley for raising this matter, and it's an opportune moment because she's aware of a block of land, particular block of land, that is for sale in Bonnievale Estate at the moment. I don't know if she knows the exact cost of that block of land, but perhaps council staff could answer that question.
Mr. Smee?
Through you, Mayor, I believe it's around $260,000.
That is what concerns me. What is being proposed is that we're buying a block of land at the full price rather than acquiring it at the time of subdivision, when we can buy it at the cost of the undeveloped land. And there's a huge difference there. The opportunity did exist when this subdivision occurred for council to take that block of land, but council staff for some reason chose not to. It does concern me that this particular block is also landlocked. It doesn't have any connection to the foreshore, and it doesn't have any footpaths leading out of this subdivision to the foreshore or even along the major road. So it's not a place that the whole community could benefit from. I've been living in Howden since 1982. I've given decades of work to the Howden Progress Association as secretary, and my husband's been president. And I do know, though, that the major wish from this community is to have somewhere for children to play and some public open space land. And in all those decades, 30-odd years, probably 40, it has not been possible to identify a piece of land that may be acquired and may be suitable for a playground or for a community space. And I'm wondering, having done the public open space strategy, whether any member of staff would like to make their comments about this particular block of land, but in also the availability of this type of land in Howden generally, if we could look at an alternative piece of land.
Mr. Smee, unless there's another member of staff.
Through you, Mayor, we've only had a very preliminary look at this particular block, and as you have identified, it does have its limitations with respect to its suitability as public open space. However, I understand that's the intent of this notice of motion, that is to get a report that investigates not only the practicalities of this particular piece of land, but also looking at what are the other alternatives that may be available. So at this stage, I couldn't give a detailed answer, but obviously if the notice of motion is supported, we will provide a report that answers all those questions.
Thank you. As Mr. Smee says, this is a request for a report, and I'm pleased to hear that it's more general and not just focusing on a currently for sale piece of land. Thank you.
Okay, I have no further comments. Councillor Wass.
Thank you. Can I ask the mover as to the purpose of the report sought?
Councillor Meachery.
So the purpose of the report, Councillor Wass, is to not miss an opportunity. Perhaps this isn't the right opportunity, but perhaps this might be the last opportunity where there could be a public open space for a playground or just a public open space for the community in Howden. I understand what Councillor Fox has said, but that is the purpose of the report, I guess, to not miss an opportunity that could be before us. And I see it living here as possibly one of the last opportunities, but perhaps I am wrong in that. And so that's where a report would identify the bigger picture. If this is not something that is recommended, then perhaps there is another place, another subdivision in the future or a plan that could be recommended so that we don't miss the opportunity. Did that answer your question?
Not really. So I'll move on to the next question. Where is the desire to acquire the land?
Mayor, would you like me to answer that?
Sure.
Councillor Wasser, as Councillor Fox stated before, that it has been, I don't know if it's completely stated, but it has been an interest of the Howden Progress Association and members of the community for a while. Walking around the streets in Howden, you could come for a walk with me and talk to families. It's definitely something.
When do you wish to acquire the land? Not the reasons. I know the whole reasons, and I probably know it as well as you.
Could you please repeat that question?
The purpose of this motion, when is it the desire to acquire the land?
Sorry, excuse my background noises. Sorry, I don't understand the question. Where is the desire?
I think Councillor Wass, did you say when? The question is when the purchase, is that correct, Councillor Wass?
Yes, that's correct, Mayor. Thank you.
It's just asking for a report, Councillor Wass.
Well then, Mayor, I will speak against the motion simply because we want a report. We all know whether we live in Howden or not, of the urgency and the desire for the Howden community to have a central parcel of land for public open space. That has been known for a number of years, and I think Councillor Fox summed it up quite right. The issue that I have is that if we identify a block of land now, where do we get the money to keep to continue the purchase? I don't believe we should use our cash surplus or non-expended funds. I believe that it should be a budget item, and on that basis, I will speak and vote against it.
Councillor Westwood.
Thank you, Mayor. Look, I think there's been some really good points raised tonight, particularly in the current budget environment. But I do have some sympathy for the residents of Howden. There are a lot of young families in that area, and there isn't anywhere really for them to go that's safe to play. So I guess given that the notice of motion, given that the motion is asking for a report, I'm happy to support that. Without, I guess, giving a commitment that I would support spending $260,000 on buying a block of land, but probably more so that this can be factored into Council's playground strategy, perhaps, and included in future considerations of what we do with the funds in our public open space reserve. So very happy to have a report come forward without making any commitments against the budget at this point in time.
Further contributions?
Mayor, just from me, please.
Councillor Reid.
Thank you. Just briefly, like a couple of other speakers, I did live in Howden for a short period of time, and it was at a time when my children were quite young. And I recall vividly the fact that there was nowhere for them to go, and certainly because of the road, it wasn't safe. There were no sort of safe places that they could walk. It was very frustrating, and there seems to be an opportunity here, and I think that we would be mistaken if we didn't at least investigate it to the fullest extent that we could, without at this stage making a commitment to purchasing it. But I think that we owe it to the local community down there to have the report and to make sure that we're looking at all aspects of this. So I support the motion put forward by Councillor Midgley.
Further contributions? I want to say thanks to Councillor Mitchell for bringing this. This is one of those reasonable, and we're lucky we've got some free councillors who live in the that very close to that area. And it's why it's so great to have people who live locally, because they get the local issues, they understand the local people, and always reflect. There seems to be a lot of areas that don't often get represented around council. Taruna reminds me of that, where we don't hear a lot of these sort of conversations. But the question of money has been raised, and I think what's important here is that we have a fund for public open space which has been collected from developers over many years, which has, from memory, almost $1 million in it. And we have a public open space strategy that says that it is a medium priority for Howden to get some more public open space. So I can't understand why you wouldn't vote for the motion, because it's really taking us to that next step in examining whether this meets the purposes of the public open space strategy that most of us endorsed, and also whether we can afford it through our public open space fund that's sitting there. It's not going to impact our underlying result, because it's a one-off cost and a capital cost. So whilst money is tight, there is a fund there that we have set aside over many years with the expectation from our community that it would be used to fund public open space. To sum up, Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. So just to sum up again, it's not committing us to any expenditures. It's a report for further exploration. It's about not missing an opportunity. It's about a local councillor putting a local matter on the agenda. and it's about perhaps I understand this block is not the most appropriate, but perhaps through further exploration, as Mr. Smee said, there could be some other possible areas locally in that vicinity that could be better. There could be perhaps further subdivisions that are on the agenda, that are on the cards of the local area that we might not be aware of. It's the vicinity and it's looking further so that we don't miss an opportunity. So thank you very much for sharing, everybody, your thoughts, and I look forward to the outcome.
Thanks, Councillor Midgley. So the motion was moved by Councillor Midgley and it was seconded by Councillor Cordova. And the motion reads that Council investigate the purchase of a parcel of land currently for sale at Bonnyvale Estate, Howden, for public open space, and a report on the outcome of this investigation be provided back to Council at the Council meeting on 25 June 2020. Now, if we can unmute ourselves, I can hear people doing that. And as I shuffle through from our list of names. Okay, I don't have my list, so I'll just go through a different... No, I do have my list. Okay. Councillor Westwood.
Yes.
Councillor Bastone.
Yes.
Councillor Cordova.
Yes.
Councillor Fox.
Yes.
Councillor Midgley.
Yes.
Councillor Street.
Yes.
Councillor Watts.
No.
Councillor Reet.
Yes.
Councillor Winter is a yes, so the motion is carried. Next item on our list is on page 36, and it is titled, page 35, and it's titled Huntingville Development, and it's also from Councillor Midgley. Councillor Midgley, would you like to move that? Councillor Midgley, would you like to move that?
Yes, please. Thank you.
I'll second. Thanks.
Second from Councillor Cordova. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, I was busy on the weekend. Mayor, I've put forward this motion because, as we are aware, the master plan for Huntingfield is currently out for public comment. And the motion is that Council write to the Minister for Planning, the Honourable Roger Gench MP, on behalf of the Kingborough community, requesting the Tasmanian Government expand its consultation to increase a series of community workshops to present the Huntingfield Master Plan draft to residents and extend the time frame for receipt of community submissions to allow these workshops to be held in person following the gradual lifting of social distancing requirements. I note, Mayor, that in some recent correspondence, it stated Huntingfield is the first of its kind in Tasmania where innovative planning has been undertaken to deliver a broad mix of housing options to the Tasmanian community. To me, this sings, well, we better get it right and we better make sure that we bring the community along with us to ensure their voices are heard and that their questions can be answered. The motion that I've put forward tonight is to ensure just that, to ensure equity and accessibility. So not everyone understands how to look at social pinpoint. It is relatively new in state government, I'm quite sure. Anyone can correct me on that. And not everyone has a computer or internet. And people can get bamboozled and misled by information from different over-the-backyard fences and that sort of a thing, and actually not know how to put in a submission. And last year, I note, the Minister did promise a public meeting, but I understand, due to COVID-19, that we cannot have such a significant public meeting. But as restrictions are easing, there is possibility of small book-in type sessions that the team behind the master plan could do to ensure that the engagement process is accessible and equitable. It feels really like our hands are tied as councillors as the community comes to us with comments and questions around how to put forward their views on social pinpoint and giving them directions and advice in regards to how to just navigate social pinpoint, really. So I think it's one small ask that we can do on behalf of our community to ensure that their voices are heard, their accessible and equitable voices are heard for this significant development within our municipality.
I don't have anyone that's yet said they want to speak. Who would like to speak? Councillor Reet.
Thank you, and I thank Councillor Midgley for bringing this notice of motion forward, because I think it's very, very distressing for the local community, but particularly those people who live within the Huntingfield area at the moment, to not be afforded some community consultation. And if the state government really took notice of the fact that there were, what, I think 300 people or so who packed the community hub when there was a meeting held by the Planning Alliance, that just proves that there is a huge amount of interest within the Kingborough community about this. And what was expressed at that meeting was a lot of concern about infrastructure issues and much more. It's fair to say that the consultation process that the state government already undertook was inadequate, and it locked out many members of the local Huntingfield community. And now is the time, given the magnitude of this proposal, for them to be able to have a say. And I'm sure that there would be ways that, even within the physical distancing requirements of the current situation that we find ourselves in, that this would be possible. And so I think we should be urging the Minister for Planning to extend these consultations, as the motion says. So I thank Councillor Midgley for bringing it, and I look forward to supporting this motion. And apologies for my cat meowing there.
I was wondering about that. Okay, any further speakers? Councillor Mitchell, would you like to sum up? Oh, hang on, Councillor Corrada.
Thank you so much, Mayor. Sorry about that. I just want to echo the points that have been made so far, that really we're in a very difficult time, and the most important thing that we can do is make sure that the community is brought along with this process. And so to give extra capacity for consultation, extra capacity for some meaningful engagement into what is quite a controversial process, I think that the whole council and the whole municipality will be better for expanding its consultation to include a series of community workshops, and also to extend that time frame as has been proposed. Thank you, Mayor.
Further speakers? Councillor Midgley, would you like to sum up?
No, thanks, Mayor.
The motion moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Cordova is that Council write to the Minister for Planning, the Honourable Roger Yenchi MP, on behalf of the Kingborough community, requesting the Tasmanian Government 1 expand its consultation to include a series of community workshops to present the Kingborough the Huntingfield Master Plan draft to residents, and 2, extend the timeframe for receipt of community submissions to allow these workshops to be held in person following the gradual lifting of social distancing requirements. So I'm going to go through my list, if you can all unmute yourselves. Councillor Westwood.
Yes.
Councillor Bastone.
Yes.
Councillor Cordova.
Yes.
Councillor Fox.
Yes.
Councillor Midgley.
Yes.
Councillor Street.
Yes.
Councillor Wass.
Yes.
Councillor Reid.
Yes.
And Councillor Winter is also a yes, which means the motion is carried unanimously. It is 7:25 p.m. We've been going almost 2 hours, and I think we probably need a break. How about we come back at 7:35 p.m. Any objections? See you all at 7:35, which is in 10 minutes. Thank you.